Welcome to First Things First. It is the last day of the calendar year. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright, if I'm pointing correctly. That is Bart Scott in for Chris Carter. That would not be Chris Carter's thing. We got a big Monday show. Thanks for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. You guys know I have no life.
Yes. Great, well, then what does that make us, Bart? What does that make us? We do it every day. Steelers season came crashing down yesterday. Cowboys are heading into the playoffs on a high note, but we have to start with whatever's in the water in Philadelphia, because for a second straight year, the Eagles are in the postseason, thanks in large part to not their franchise quarterback, but his backup, Nick Foles. How'd they get here? Well, they had to beat Washington, and they did, 24-0. And the Vikings had to lose, which they did. And that secured the sixth and final spot in the NFC playoffs for the Philadelphia Eagles. Nick Foles, their backup quarterback, completed 25 straight passes, including two touchdowns, before leaving the game with a chest injury. He will undergo further tests today. But back to the state of affairs in Philly, here's head coach Doug Peterson on the team's mindset down the stretch.
This team really hung together. I credit the leadership of the team, the coaches, just keeping the guys focused on one game at a time. And this last half, things began to kind of click for us. And, you know, the guys just got better as each week came. And you know, to do what we've done here this last month and a half is credit to the guys.
So, Nick, on December 9th, the Eagles were 6-7. They had lost to the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Carson Wentz was hurt. Things looked like they weren't going great for the defending Super Bowl champs. Now here they are in the postseason. How impressive has this Eagles turnaround been?
Wildly impressive. The last 3 weeks, they look like the Super Bowl champs again for the first time all year. The turnaround really started a few weeks before that Cowboys game. They were 4-6 after getting mollywopped by the Saints. Just embarrassed. The Saints were running trick plays on them, running up the score. They won their next two games. Then they took Dallas to overtime in a game they could have won, and Carson gets hurt. But these last 3 weeks with Nick Foles, and I know we'll talk about Nick Foles, it's not just the play of the quarterback. It's the overall team play, where they beat a Rams team in Los Angeles, a Rams team that's was fighting for the one seed. Then they turn around and beat a Houston team that loss cost Houston the two seed. And then they beat Washington, and everyone expected them to beat Washington, but they dominated Washington. Fletcher Cox looks like Fletcher Cox again. All around, this team, all of a sudden, this last month of football, looks not just like a team that snuck into the playoffs at 9-7, but a threat in the postseason. And I understand Nick Foles is the biggest story with them, and he should be for a good reason. But the entire team is playing its best football that it's played all year.
The main reason that this team is playing well is because of Saint Nick. He's the greatest Christmas present that any team could have asked for. When you look at the same thing that Nick is doing, it's the same thing that Lamar Jackson provided for the Baltimore Ravens. He energized this team. He gave them a sense of belief. And what happened is, now you start to look at the rush attempts, 34 rush attempts. You know, you look at how they're moving the football, but it's all about the rhythm, too. It's about this offense is getting a rhythm. They're starting to run the ball. It's simple with Nick. Him and Peterson have such a chemistry. It's either RPO, check down, or shots.
Or deep shots.
Or shots, right? And all you have to do is hit a couple of shots, you know, for you to be successful. You know, usually when you throw the ball deep, three things can happen, and they're all positive for the offense. You talk about the illegal, you know, contact, you know, holding, PI. They rarely intercept it. And what's happening now is, now this defense gets an opportunity to rest. You're protecting the secondary that struggles. And now you talk about Fletcher Cox. You talk about that front seven. They have the time to go rest on the sideline and get a drink of water before it was Carson Wentz, and they were giving too much to Carson Wentz. You notice they haven't invited Carson Wentz back.
Well, and Carson Wentz been trying to get back. Carson Wentz went and got a second opinion outside of the team. And I would say Nick Foles got some bruised ribs, maybe cracked ribs.
Two weeks in a row this week.
No, he got hit real hard last week by Clowney, and I couldn't believe he came back
one play later.
This game, they removed him from it. He's going to have x-rays. I think he's going to be able to play. But he has been, Jenna, it's been sports movie stuff. It's been the type of stuff you love.
I love this. And while you're right, it's not all Nick Foles, my question to you would be, is there something about something as small as or as big as a quarterback change, regardless of who it is, just something that tweaks it a little differently? Maybe the players respond a little differently, regardless of his talent or skill level, that's enough to sort of propel a team to play the way they've been playing?
I think Doug Peterson understands Nick Foles' limitations. And with Carson Wentz, there are no limitations, so they throw the whole playbook on him. And then he's overthinking. They're doing too much. Now they're going back to the basics, running the football, setting up deep shots, play action. Now all of a sudden, Alshon Jeffries looks like he's returning back to form. Nelson Aguilar is open. He's open everything. And somebody on this set said that this team was better about 2 months ago. You should have saw my Twitter feed, or you should have saw my Instagram. They were coming at me. Uh-huh. Apologize, Philly. Apologize.
But do you?
Well, but here's the other thing. We know certain teams are great as front runners, right? The number one seed in the AFC, I think, is one of those teams. If they jump out on you early, they're going to do what they did to Oakland yesterday. Yeah. It's going to be over in the first quarter. What we know about this Eagles team the last 2 years, they haven't worn the front runner hat very well.
They don't want to.
They didn't have it that long. By the time they became, oh my God, this team could go to the Super Bowl, and people started looking at them like that last year, is right around the time Carson got hurt. So they never really had the target on their back. This year, when they did have it, even with Foles in the beginning, they didn't respond. This team responds offensively and defensively to that underdog role that we laughed at last year. And the quarterback, I can show it to you here, he's played 11 games in the last 2 years for the Eagles. On the left-hand side, those are games that if they lose, their season is over. Six games, either playoff games or this run. He's been spectacular. The other five games are the games at the end of last regular season, beginning this regular season. He hasn't been very good. But when he has been in a must-win situation, he's been spectacular. He tied the NFL record yesterday for consecutive completions in a game, and that was when the game was still in the balance. He threw an early pick when it looked like he might let Washington into the game, and from that moment forward, he was spectacular.
Okay, so they're in the postseason now. Yeah. They're playing as good as they've been playing. Nick Foles looks like he's got some of that magic back, but are they good enough to get back to the Super Bowl?
I don't know about get back to the Super Bowl because they're still flawed, especially in the secondary. But they are a team that nobody wants to play because they got into the playoffs and it's almost like a new lease on life. You know, they're playing with house money. So they're a dangerous football team because they have that experience. They understand the situational football that takes place in the playoffs. They understand how fast the game moves. They understand, you know, that, you know, usually teams lose it in the playoffs. They don't win it. And, you know, they have that experience. So, collectively, they had that experience. They brought in Bennett. They brought in Haloti Ngata, who are Super Bowl champions. They have enough experience to find ways to make it difficult for you as a team to put them out. They won't be an easy out.
And, listen, I'm not going to say they're good enough to go back to the Super Bowl, but let's just look 1 week ahead. They're playing the Chicago Bears this coming week. Now, I think the Bears have been an undervalued, underrated team all year. But nobody knows how Mitch Trubisky is going to play in his first career playoff game. Nobody knows how Matt Nagy is going to coach in his first career playoff game. And by the way, who did Matt Nagy learn from? Andy Reid, a guy who's had his own playoff struggles as far as what he does with his offense in the postseason. The Bears are better. The Bears are playing excellent football. The Bears were, without the Bears, the Eagles aren't in this thing because they knocked the Vikings out yesterday. But the Bears are one of the few teams in this postseason where even if you don't fully buy into the Nick Foles magic, you can go into it and say, oh, well, they might have the edge at quarterback. As of lately, their defense, they're not playing like the Bears' defense, but is playing, I think since week 12, they're one of three defenses with at least 18 sacks and 10 takeaways. They're being opportunistic, and they do scare you offensively because of the deep shot. The thing with the Carson Wentz offense was there's a reason Zach Ertz obliterated Jason Witten's reception record by a tight end.
Right.
It was just Ertz, Ertz, Ertz. Now Alshon Jeffery, Nelson Aguilar, getting Darren Sproles back was huge. Right. You have a much more potent offensive attack.
Nobody's happier than Alshon Jeffery. I mean, he's too. does it make a difference to you that they're on the road?
Oh, of course. Listen, now, yesterday they weren't on the road. Right. I mean, they were, but I...
Homecoming game.
That was crazy, the way the Philly fans took over FedEx Field, I think that's what it's called in Washington, and made that a home game. Of course it matters. And we've never seen this Eagles team play a road playoff game. But the elements aren't going to bother them in Chicago, I wouldn't imagine. And I think the Bears are happy they won yesterday.
Yeah.
I think they'd rather be playing the Vikings a second time rather than playing the Eagles this week.
Well, they could have controlled that. That's all now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, speaking of, the Vikings. Vikings missed the playoffs after signing Kirk Cousins to that old $84 million contract. We'll talk about that next on First Things First. You're already.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Back here on First Things First, we'll get to Bears in a second, but first, Saquon Barkley channeling his inner MJ, Michael Jordan, with this dunk to get the touchdown.
I mean, he leaps from the four-yard line. How many feet is that, Jenna? Four yards.
12.
Good job, Jenna. Whoa. Oh, my God. Wow, didn't even take her shoes off.
We better end the show right now.
That was, when he jumped, I said, what are you doing?
Yeah, man.
He went and got it.
He's a beast.
This was a wildly entertaining game. Really fun back and forth.
For having no playoff implications, yep. It really was. Same game, which they said, again, meaningless. Tell that to Dak and Cole Beasley. Look at the beautiful catch, and he gets his knee down in bounds.
I've never been a fan of instant replay in the NFL, yeah. Bart, but, God, did they need it in the league yesterday.
You got it right.
I mean, this was one of half a dozen plays that was called wrong on the field. What a spectacular catch by Cole Beasley. Yeah.
I didn't like it with the Perriman catch. Oh. Hurt my Ravens.
Last we have Baker Mayfield, who fakes the jet sweep, tossing the ball to himself, then throws a TD pass to Jarvis Landry.
All right, so I've never seen the jet sweep faked like that. I mean,
that's the first one. Hey, I've never seen that either.
And it worked. The linebackers bit up. That's a really interesting wrinkle that I would imagine you're going to see the Chiefs and the Rams steal in the playoffs.
I know technically they don't have a coach. But you got to tip your hat to Greg Williams and how they were able to keep this thing moving.
All right, moving on. Kirk Cousins and the Vikings facing a win and get-in scenario against the Bears on Sunday, and Kirk Cousins could not get it done. Threw for just 132 yards, completing barely 60% of his throws. Vikings lose to the Bears 24-10. They miss the playoffs a year after going to the NFC title game. Here is Kirk Cousins afterwards.
I don't know what the scale of disappointment is, but we're disappointed. We'd love to be in the playoffs, and I said it all year. I love our team, love our group of guys, and we weren't ready for it to end. And unfortunately, it's over.
Well, I mean, the game we played today, it's not a playoff performance. You can't go out there and play like we did today, expect to get in the playoffs. And so I don't think we deserve the way we played. We don't deserve to get in the playoffs, no.
Okay, so shortly after this game, towards the end of it, I mean, social media was just up and down, blaming number 8, 100%. Was the $84 million warranted? Yep. But who is really to blame? Is it really all on Kirk Cousins, this loss?
It's not all on Kirk Cousins. But if we're divvying up blame, and it's a pie chart, his piece is the biggest. The offensive line gets a piece. The Vikings' inability to figure out who they were offensively gets a piece. I would say the defense playing well, but not playing quite up to its talent level, especially in the first three quarters of the season, they get a piece. But the biggest piece goes to number 8, because this is who he's been forever. A guy who can put up big numbers, guy who can throw for a bunch of yards, and a guy who, against good teams in the biggest games, stinks.
But isn't that why they got him?
Well, they got him for the first part and hoped that the second part was a Jay Gruden Washington problem rather than a Kirk Cousins problem. This is not 2008 AFC. And what do I mean by that? Where an 11-win team missed the playoffs. Remember that? The Pats, where it's like, damn, it's just tough conference. A 9-7 Eagles team got your spot. You didn't have to be great. You just had to not be horrible. You had a home game in the final game of the year. I know Chicago was playing their starters, Bart, but the motivation was different. It's a playoff game for Minnesota. Chicago doesn't have to win it. And you came out flat, and Kirk had 80 yards passing going late into the fourth quarter. It was a disaster for the Vikings.
Listen, as a Jets fan, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because the pressure is all on Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings to perform, right? Because you give somebody guaranteed money, a team that was, you know, one game from the Super Bowl, and you expect, and you bring a guy in, a veteran quarterback in the middle of his career to get you over the hump for moments just like this. Not only did he fall flat, he fell flat on his face. And you can see how animated Thielen was, and he's talking about, hey, dude, I don't have enough time. Well, this is why they bought you in there, and they fired DeFilippo because he wouldn't run the football. Guess how many times they ran the football yesterday?
Tell me.
15 times. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they put it on Kirk Cousins. They put it all on his shoulders, and he couldn't deliver. But this isn't the first time he couldn't deliver, because I remember when he was in Washington and they had a play-in game at home, and he fell flat on his face as well. What happens is, you think about Case Keenum and why Case Keenum is better for this team is because you need somebody that's mobile within the pocket to buy time, because you understand that his limitations with this offensive line. Those issues weren't addressed. But there were masks last year because Case Keenum was able to buy time in a pocket. What is Kirk Cousins? He's a pocket quarterback, a glorified game manager, and you gave him a guaranteed contract. You deserve what you got, Minnesota. Thank you so much, Kirk, for the turning down the money.
Right, when Bart says, as a Jets fan, because the Jets offered him $90 million instead of $86 million to come there, which would have totally changed their progression. They wouldn't have had Darnold. They'd have been in win-now mode. Now the Jets get to go on a more conventional progression, and the Vikings are left asking, what's next?
But they didn't just come out flat, and it wasn't just Kirk Cousins. The whole team just played uninspired ball on a day where, forget anything else that happened this season, they had to come out and play, or their whole season was over. How do you explain it? Leading the team? Is that on the head coach?
If you want to sum it up, right, a play that sums it up, Diggs coming across, 3rd and 5, needing to convert to keep the game alive, and he got tattooed. You can say whatever you want. Chicago is a better version of what Minnesota thought that they were. And they got hit in the mouth, and they didn't like it. You know, it's kind of when you see a mirror image of yourself, but they're a little tougher than you, and your whole identity was you're tougher and you're badder than somebody, and you've realized that you're not the baddest dude on the block. And then you got some decisions to make. And you saw guys making decisions, you know, business decisions, that they weren't really about that smoke. They were talking loud, but they understood that they were going against an opponent that was going to hit you in the mouth, that was going to let you catch the football, and it was going to make you pay the tax.
That was, I mean, when you said that 3rd and 5, that was one of 11 third downs the Vikings had in this game. They converted a single one of them. Late in the game, I think they were 0-for-8 on third down before the game totally got away from them. But here's why this is potentially truly disastrous for the Minnesota Vikings. This was their window. Like, I understood them going and getting Kirk Cousins. I supported them doing it because I am a guy that I look at the contracts. I look at who's on a rookie deal, who's not, who do you have to pay. Last year was a year ahead of schedule for them as far as really being a Super Bowl contender. But they know Anthony Barr is coming up. They know Thielen's not going to play on that nonsense contract he has forever. They know Diggs is just getting more and more expensive. They know Trey Waynes is going to be gone probably next year. They know all these things. So what they did was they said, we were this close to the Super Bowl last year. We are going to, even if we don't go 13-3, we want to make sure our biggest question mark, which was quarterback on that team last year, other than offensive line, is addressed. So they went out and got the best guy on the market because they thought, we'll be back in the tournament this year, we'll be back in the tournament next year, and then we're going to, if Kirk's great, we'll be able to overcome the defensive losses. If he's not, we'll deal with it then. To not make the playoffs this year. 13-3, you don't have to go to 14-2. You can go to 10-6, but to go to 8 wins, from 13-3 with the schedule that they had. With it's not, they suffer devastating injuries. They had Nick Easton loss in the preseason. They had a tragic death of their offensive line coach. I understand that. But you've got to be able to overcome it. And even though they were mediocre all year, Jenna, they had a win in your situation. And you alluded to it. 2015, Kirk's first year as a starter. They're in the playoffs. They're at home, up 11-0 on Green Bay. Get beat 35-18. The next year, win in your end game at home against the Giants. No. And they score 10 points. And Kirk has one touchdown, two picks. This year, they played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven games against teams that made the playoffs. They went 1-6. Like, that's their season. That's how you turn into this team.
One of those teams was the Miami Dolphins, who ended up with a losing record.
Oh, those are teams, right. So they were 1-6 against teams that made the playoffs against teams that went into the game with a winning record. They're 1-8-1, and Cousins is in his last 10.
It's been an effort to very gently pat myself on the back. I did come out last year and say, why fix what ain't broken? I mean, I understand that they had to, but this is what happened.
Okay, here's the thing. I would just caution you on patting yourself on the back there.
If I could reach it, I'd go, gun show.
What's up? Go ahead. Here we go.
I'm very excited to watch Case Keenum in the playoffs this week. Let me see. Oh, Denver won 6 games.
I know.
He got his coach fired.
Yeah, Denver, I mean, he's getting his coach is gone. I mean,
all right, okay. Fine. I had like 8 seconds of glory, and then it was quickly demolished. Time now for Put a Grade On It, sponsored by CarMax. Okay, so the Bears finished the season 12-4, good for the 3 seed in the NFC. Bart, put a grade on the Chicago Bears season.
A+, and it's about time that people start giving Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears, some head coach consideration. Yep. He's a guy that's been around for a long time and never got that look. If you're looking for a good head coach, Vic Fangio would be great.
I agree with Bart. A+. There's only 2 teams in the NFL that finished with a better record than them, the Rams and the Saints. Like, it's not their fault they were in the conference that was stronger up top. They lost their first game of the year in devastating fashion, letting Aaron Rodgers come back into it. They won 12 games the rest of the way. The Khalil Mack trade supercharged this team. Yeah. Trubisky's been good enough. This is a scary playoff team. If you tell me the Saints aren't winning the NFC, who is? Chicago would be my pick over the Rams, over any of the other teams playing this weekend. What an outstanding season for them.
They're the Ravens for the NFC.
No doubt.
Bears making
with
the
better
playoffs
offense
for the first time in 8 seasons, and probably the hottest team maybe even coming out after the way they came down the stretch. Got to take a break. Coming up, what went so wrong for the Pittsburgh Steelers? We will dive into that whole scenario next on First Things First. Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Here we go. The Chiefs secured the number 1 seed in the AFC with a win over the Raiders. Patrick Mahomes threw for 2 touchdowns and joined Peyton Manning as the only quarterbacks to throw for 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards in a season. Nick, did Mahomes lock up the MVP yesterday?
If he needed yesterday to lock it up, he did. If Mahomes doesn't win this award, they should stop giving it out. It's not even close. He's got 1,100 more yards and 18 more touchdowns than Drew Brees. This is a blowout for Patrick Mahomes, one of the greatest seasons any quarterback's ever had.
Do you understand? This award sometimes could be a lifetime achievement award, and the fact that Drew Brees have broke some records as well this year, and their team is in the playoffs, number 1 seed. It can go either way, and sometimes they may say, hey, young fella, you got to wait a year. It would be wrong, because I think this is a historic season for a guy as a first-time starter. We've never seen this before.
Never seen it.
But listen, I've never been surprised. I'm telling you, watch out, man.
Okay. It'll be a
the Drew Brees Invitational.
To the NFC now, the Rams earned the 2 seed with a 48-32 win over the San Francisco 49ers. Jared Goff had a nice day, throwing for nearly 200 yards and 4 touchdowns. Bart, how dangerous is this Rams team now heading into the playoffs?
It's Mr. Jekyll and Mr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you close enough. You know what I mean?
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, absolutely. Jekyll and Hyde. I'll stay there. This team lack of defense concerns me, and it scares me. The same, you know, concerns I have about the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, because you can run into a team and you throw a bad pick and you get behind and then you have to press, and you defensively you can't stop a team in a 4-minute offense. They're going to realize that the playoffs is a little bit different. I know they got some experience from last year, but I don't know how far this team can go.
Their star left tackle, Andrew Whitworth, got dinged in this game, something to watch. Here's the thing. If the Rams keep Goff upright and give him time, their offense is as good as anybody's. They did this without Todd Gurley yesterday. But when Goff's under pressure, and by the way, if the Bears win their first playoff game, that's what the matchup would be. Bears-Rams in the Coliseum, that's a tough matchup for them. In perfect circumstances, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. I don't know if the playoffs are going to give them those perfect circumstances.
All right, guys, it's been about 12 minutes since the regular season ended, so here come the coaching changes. Both Dirk Cutter and Todd Bowles were relieved of their duties yesterday. Yeah, they were fired. Jay Glazer reports that up to 7 total coaches could be let go by the end of the day. Nick, surprised by these moves?
These two, not at all. We knew Dirk was done unless the Bucs turned it all the way around this year. And Todd Bowles, a lot of people wanted him fired last year. I didn't think he should be fired last year. He was excellent in year one. I thought that bought him at least the full 4-year contract. But the Jets, I mean, they were terrible this season. And you didn't see enough progression offensively at any point in his tenure. So, no, these two guys, we knew they were going to get fired. I am surprised there's going to be no changes in Jacksonville. That seems like a team that's just running into a brick wall.
Well, the worst-kept secret, you know, in the NFL was that Todd Bowles was going to be fired. I think when you think about Dirk Cutter, you know, he's been on the hot seat for the last previous seasons. And where it's different for Todd Bowles, where he doesn't have the personnel or the talent, and I think maybe McCagney should be held accountable for that as well, Dirk Cutter doesn't have the excuse. They got O.J. the Juice Man. They got Mike Evans. They have a number one overall pick. Yep. They have the talent, you know, and so it's up to him to make sure that they perform. They went out and got, you know, Pierre Paul. You know, so we knew that he was walking a mile. We knew he was going as well.
All right, moving on to the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger needed a help and a win to make the playoffs. We start with first the Steelers. Kicker Matt McCrane hits the field goal, putting the Steelers up 16-13. That would be the final score. Let's go to the Browns-Ravens now. Browns down to Baker Mayfield finds Jarvis Landry. They would review. It's a catch. Remember, Steelers need Cleveland to win, and they are in. Steelers players, fans watching on the Jumbotron, rooting hard for Baker, but on 4th and 10, Baker gets picked off by C.J. Mosley, and the Ravens win the game. Ravens win the AFC North. That means the Steelers are staying home this year. Here is Steelers quarterback Big Ben on if his team underachieved this season.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not the coach. I'm not the owners. I just try and play quarterback. And, you know, first thing I'll do is look in the mirror and say I need to play better. And I'll always say it starts there.
We accept the outcome. Obviously, we've had 17 weeks, man, to state a case for ourselves. We stand by our work. You have to in this business, but I am appreciative of the efforts today. It is what it is.
All right, Bart Scott, you could basically put together a mini-series of all the sound bites from the Steelers, starting with Ben Roethlisberger this season. What went so wrong for this team down the stretch?
Down the stretch, I think it started with the distractions, right? And it started with the distractions with Le'Veon Bell. You know, them deciding not to sign him long term. You know, he was, you know, one of the three Bs. He was part of that, you know, that nucleus that they were going to, you know, lean on. I think, but when you go back and you say, okay, what really hurt this team? I think Ryan Shazier. You know, people don't realize how important it is in a 3-4 defense to have an impact middle linebacker, a guy that can be the core of your defense, right? He's the connection from the front seven to the back end. You saw C.J. Mosley with that tremendous interception. Well, he's playing that dominant Mike position. You need that if you're going to be an aggressive team. They haven't found a way to replace him. And until they do, they're going to always struggle to be in games because they can't close. They don't have a guy that could be, you know, impactful in the run game, but also in the pass game as well. And coming back and going back, and everybody was loving how Connors was playing well. Who needs Le'Veon? Well, what happens is he ran out of gas. He ran into that. He's not a rookie. He ran into that wall. What happens is you ask him to do something that he had never done before. And anybody that's ever ran, anybody that's ever worked out, when you do something for the first time, your body doesn't know how to respond. James Conner's going to be good in the long run, but we don't know how long that this nucleus is going to be together. It's starting to seem like it's a transition between Antonio Brown to Juju Smith, which is what happened when it was Santonio Holmes to Antonio Brown. But they're going to have to reload and rebuild and figure out how they're going to move forward. And Big Ben is every year. Are we going to have a distraction in the offseason? Is he retiring again? You know, so they're going to have to really come together and figure out how they're going to move forward because Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson is the future of that division, and the future is now.
And that's why this is such a missed opportunity for Pittsburgh, because the Browns are only going to get better. the Ravens are only going to get better, right? Like, this was the year for Pittsburgh. So I don't know if Le'Veon Bell is going to win on his end of the stare down with Pittsburgh. We won't know that till we see the contract he gets. But I know Pittsburgh lost. I know that this was a squandered season, that whatever their ceiling was with Le'Veon Bell, it dropped a couple notches without him. But that still should have been a playoff team. And so just pick, you asked what happened down the stretch, because they were 7-2-1.
Had to lead.
Only the third team under this current playoff format to have that quality of a record through 10 games to not qualify for the postseason. Forget one game. Pick one play that I'm about to list. If it goes differently, they win the division. Against the Broncos, Big Ben's interception. Remember when the nose tackle picked him off?
Yeah.
And if it wasn't picked off by him, it would have been picked off by the corner against the Broncos. This play right here. If this play goes differently, they win the division. How about the Chargers? Pick one of 100 plays in the second half defensively. Or the fourth down we're showing you against the Raiders. Or any of these plays against the Saints, be it the fake punt or the two fumbles late. Like, any one of those dozen plays goes differently. And the game that's got to kill them is that Chargers game.
Yeah.
The first 16-point second-half lead squandered in the history of the franchise at home.
Wow.
They were like 174-0-1 in those situations. You win that game, you're fine. You hold on to a 4-point lead against the Raiders, you're fine. And the AFC is wide open enough this year that if they got in, they'd have been playing the Chargers again. We know that is the 4 seed. Like, who knows what would have happened? So they blew it a couple times in the preseason with Le'Veon Bell. And I'm not saying they had to give Le'Veon Bell a contract, but maybe that $14 million that was earmarked for him, if you would have just had a clean cut from him, you could have spent it elsewhere. You could have had more depth elsewhere, because the running game at the end of the year, the final 7 weeks of the year, absolutely wore down. They were getting 60% of the production they were getting the first 10 weeks. It was too much on Big Ben, and he threw too many critical interceptions.
They didn't take Le'Veon seriously. They didn't think that he would stay, that he would hold out for an entire year. If they would have believed that he would have done that, and I think hindsight's 20/20, if they would have been able to look back at it, they would have said, okay, let's trade Le'Veon, get a second or third round draft pick. Let's dump his $14 million, you know, that we have earmarked for him. Let's go out and make our team better.
Well, I think it's far more this stuff that Nick mentioned, I think, than the distractions, because this is a team that feeds off those distractions. Every year they seem to have them. Every year except this one, they seem to have been okay and made the playoffs. But let's now look to the team that did win it in the AFC North, and that's the Ravens. Lamar Jackson, I mean, he had his doubters out there. Many felt that that style of play could not be sustainable. They couldn't win more than a couple games till defenses started figuring him out. Nick, how far can Lamar Jackson and the way that offense is playing take this team? Because we know how the defense is.
Baltimore's terrifying. Like, every team in the AFC should be afraid of Baltimore right now. Now, could they lose in the first round of the Chargers? Sure, of course, it's playoffs. But I'm telling you, Chiefs fans, Patriots fans, Chargers fans, you know who they were rooting for yesterday? The Browns.
Yes.
All of them wanted the Steelers in the tournament instead of this team. Because you used a very important word that we use when talking about Baltimore: sustainable. Lamar's style and the Ravens' style is not sustainable for Lamar's career, because it's guaranteed he'll get hurt playing that way eventually. Right. There is no guarantee he gets hurt in the next month.
Right.
It is certainly sustainable for the rest of this season. Like, what they are doing right now works. The only reason, if I may mix metaphors for a moment, if this were Madden, and you could put the injury sliders at zero, he could play this way for 15 years. It's not that he can't play this way because NFL defenses are going to figure it out. He can't play this way because he will get hurt. But that doesn't mean he'll get hurt this month.
Right.
And as long as their defense is doing this and they're dominating time of possession, they're rushing for 240 a game, that is a terrifying team to play.
I mean, you look at the time of possession, right? Which so allows this number one defense to rest so they can come out and hunt.
Fresh.
But also, it puts pressure on your offense because it feels like, okay, when I get the ball, I have to score. And remember when the Wildcat came into the NFL and it took the league by storm? Mm-hmm. You know, how did teams start to defeat it? Right. They start saying, you know what, I'm not going to pay attention to any of the receivers. Right. Because we know that Ronnie Brown can't throw the football.
Right.
Well, imagine the Wildcat, which forces you to defend, because people don't realize usually advantage defense because it's 11 against
10.
Because the quarterback doesn't count.
Right, because he doesn't count. But now with Lamar Jackson, it's 11 against 11. So if one guy gets cut out of a gap, if one guy doesn't get over the top of a block, now you see that lane right there is wide open. There's nobody to account for him when he gets to the second level because everybody has a guy. You know, so now it makes it difficult for opposing defense to prepare, and you don't get to practice against this. You don't see this offense again if you don't play the Ravens. So what happens is you don't know how to prepare for it, and you think he's fast on tape, and you're like, oh, I got him. He's breaking angles of defensive backs, linebackers alike.
But why is he any different than other mobile quarterbacks that average defenses have had to defend against? The Michael Vick,
this is
Donovan
Michael Vick.
McNabbs.
Michael Vick had enormous success.
Right.
Like, Michael Vick had enormous success and got hurt. Got his leg broke in the preseason.
Right.
And, like, go ahead.
No, but because the difference is this is Michael Vick, but this is Michael Vick in evolution. Because Michael Vick could throw the ball. We know he had a laser, right? But it wasn't designed runs. They only had like one or two designed runs for Michael Vick, and it was usually like a power boot to the left, kind of what you see with Cam. These are designed runs. RPOs didn't exist really when Michael Vick was in the league. Now this whole RPO changes the game for everybody because it pauses the linebackers, but then also it creates gaps and creates seams and vertical seams, not only for Lamar, but for Gus Edwards. Who's ever heard of Gus Edwards?
Right.
Literally
he's been in the league. He's going to free agency. This is my first time not played for the Ravens. I didn't know who the hell he was.
Well, and the other thing, I would have loved to see how Vic in his early time with Atlanta did with this defense. One of the things that hurt Vic, it was because Vic was a better passer early on than Lamar is right now, but he had to pass a lot because that team was losing a lot. Yep. It was Mike Vick. It was the old Mike Vick show from the Nike ads. And so this team, when you have a defense as good as Baltimore and Lamar quietly in the last month, oh, it's 4 touchdowns, no picks. It's a passer rating of around 93. It's only about 170 yards passing a game, but it's enough to threaten you. You can't just act like he's not going to throw the football. This is a dangerous playoff team that in the last 7 weeks has lost one game. It was an overtime on the road to the number one seed Chiefs.
Yeah.
A game they had the Chiefs to fourth and nine, and then fourth and goal from the three. They had them to fourth down twice. They just couldn't close the deal. Like, Baltimore right now, early on we said, oh, they're playing the worst defenses in football. Man, the Chargers ain't the worst defense in football. They did it to them. The Browns aren't the worst defense in football. They did it to them. The Ravens are dangerous right now.
Ravens and Chargers on Sunday afternoon. We'll see. Coming up. Speaking of dangerous, how dangerous are the Cowboys after their epic ending to the season? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, two-time Super Bowl champ David Deal is here.
Always
hey,
a pleasure.
David,
always a
happy
pleasure.
Holidays.
Happy holidays.
Best dressed big man in the game.
Everything was good over the holidays, Christmas, but
yes.
Then with my daughter Addison's birthday on the 27th.
Nice.
I hear there's an opening in Tampa Bay. I want to put my hat in for that
nice.
Coaching job. We got to make some more money here during the holidays, right?
I love it.
Absolutely.
Balling on a budget.
You, all right. Well, someone who does not have a vacancy, the Dallas Cowboys, they already secured the division title, had nothing to play for except momentum heading into the playoffs yesterday, taking on the New York Giants. Dak played the whole game, threw for 387 yards and 4 touchdowns. Some good mojo for the Cowboys as they prepare for the Seahawks in the opening round of the playoffs. Here is Dak Prescott on his mindset in a, quote, meaningless Week 17 game.
Going into this game, playing the New York Giants, wanting to get win number 10, this meant a lot to us. And you saw it out there, just the intensity that we played with, the ups and the downs, and just how we stayed through it and just stayed positive, knowing that we were going to give ourselves a chance to come out on the end. It was a great win.
All right, David, I think a lot of people surprised that Dak Prescott not only played, but played basically the whole game until you see how well he did and how much that really helped this team in this offense moving forward. How dangerous are the Cowboys now entering the playoffs?
Well, number one, you know, going into that game, no Ezekiel Elliott, no Zach Martin on the offensive line. They wanted to rest their players. But you know, Dak Prescott is not a player that can sit back and rest. He needs experience. He needs reps. And the one thing that this game did up against the New York Giants, it gave them playoff experience moments. Think about the two-point conversion at the end of the game.
Yeah.
That's something that you want to practice and prepare for when you're going into the playoffs. And for them to be able to overcome this game in the fourth quarter without all of their starters on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, it builds a lot of confidence for them. But the one thing that you know, this offense goes through Ezekiel Elliott to open up things for Amari Cooper downfield. But for Dak Prescott as a quarterback, to take the most sacks in the NFL as a mobile quarterback, that's something that in the playoffs, he's going to have to use those legs to force defenses to play 11-on-11 football to open up seams, to open up things on the backside, because that's when he plays his best. He has to get over the stigma. I'm not a just running quarterback. I've got to throw it and have that cliche in his back pocket, because his thing is, when you get play action going, when he gets outside of the pocket and he can use those legs to his advantage to change the launch point, he makes everybody better on that offense. And that's the intangible that everybody wants to see out of Scott Linehan. It's not just Scott Linehan. It's Dak Prescott as a quarterback.
To me, this was as meaningful of a meaningless game as I can remember. The Cowboys couldn't improve their seeding. They couldn't hurt their seeding. There was nothing as far as in the black and white standings to gain. But my God, did they gain a lot from this game.
Yes.
To win a game like this, Dak, who's most of his career has had three all-pro offensive linemen, this year's had two all-pro offensive linemen. He had zero in this game. Travis Frederick been gone all year. Zach Martin, Tyron Smith don't play. All career except for six games last year, he's had an all-pro running back. Doesn't have him either. All year, he's had an excellent defense. That defense, not so excellent yesterday all of a sudden. And to come back the way they did, they were up 14-0. They squander that lead against the Giants. And to come back the way they did, 4th-and-15, a touchdown strike to Cole Beasley. Dak throws for, what, 387? The second most yards. It's the first four touchdown game of his career. It's the second most passing yards of any game in his career. And it was all him. Like, the one reason the Cowboys, I have not taken them seriously as a championship contender all year, is number four, is because I don't trust their passing game. And in week 17, even if it's mostly a mirage, they have something to build upon now. I do believe in momentum going into the playoffs. I do believe a team can all of a sudden capture something. Like, you don't think the Seahawks now in the game plan, they're like, Jesus, we got Blake Jarwin? Like, we got to worry about Blake Jarwin now? And so there are little things they gained by not only winning the game, but winning it without their three best players on offense.
Right.
Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Zeke didn't play. They scored 36 points.
Yep.
They were playing the junior varsity, though. Let's be honest. You know, it was really no threat against the Giants. They don't really have a pass rush, so you knew he was going to have time to improvise and do those off-schedule plays. I think it was good for him to get some confidence, get some work in, some situational football. But they were going against a juggernaut. I mean, and this is a bad matchup, because what I love about the Dallas Cowboys is that they can out-physical you, right? Because they can run the ball with Zeke downhill. They can limit your possessions, time of possession. And also, then, that allows you to make the shots. You look at how the offense is performing since Amari Cooper's come. They're up 40 yards. You know, the third down percentage is up because now the linebackers have to come up, and now
pass
you have
yards
a guy.
Are up 70.
Yes. Right, so now you can make plays downfield. You can have the explosives. That was the problem before, right? Cole Beasley is pretty much a possession receiver. He's a guy that can move the chains. But now they're going against, you know, arguably, you know, one of the toughest teams in the game. You talk about their whole philosophy. It doesn't matter that they're not the Legion of Boom anymore. They have a fast, physical offense on both sides of the ball. And Russell Wilson is a better version of Dak Prescott. You know, he's who Dak Prescott aspires to be. And this is just a bad matchup. This has one and done for me written all over.
There are a number of things that you, Nick, were looking at with this Cowboys team that said you would feel better about Dak Prescott in the offense, and one of them was red zone efficiency. Yesterday, they were converting 3 of 4.
Right. They once again, they start the game off poorly in that regard, and then they, just like the week before, they were good on the following possessions. You mentioned the sacks.
Yes.
Dak and Deshaun Watson are the two most sacked quarterbacks in football. With Deshaun, it makes sense. They have a terrible offensive line, and he is asked to do everything. With Dak, it shouldn't be the case. So they have to get better there. But the reason that I'm not saying they're going to beat Seattle. Seattle, you mentioned Russell Wilson's better than a better version of Dak. They actually even run the ball better in Seattle than they do in Dallas, even though they don't have a guy like Zeke. But to win a game where you rush the ball 22 times for 51 yards, to win a game when your defense gives up 35 points, it was a gamble by Jason Garrett, not only to play Dak, but to leave him in the whole game. There were multiple times throughout the game where you could have taken him out, said, hey, great job, you got us a lead, you put us in position. He left him in there to where the Cowboys could be going into the playoffs feeling terribly. We blew this lead. The Giants, who are our JV team, like you put it, beat us in a game where we were playing our guys.
Or worse, injuries.
Right, or injuries. Right. And it looked like Leighton Vander Esch got dinged, but I think he's okay. Like, the Cowboys took a big gamble this weekend in my eyes, David, and I think it paid off tremendously.
I think it did as well, because if you look at 2007 when we played the Patriots at the end of the year, people told us that we should rest that game. But the one thing that it did is, even though we lost the game, it built confidence for us because, hey, if we left a couple plays on the field up against the undefeated Patriots team, we know that we're capable of beating teams that aren't as good as the Patriots. And that's something for the Dallas Cowboys that they did yesterday, to overcome that game in the fourth quarter, to do it with a game-tying drive, and then to seal it with a two-point conversion. What more could you ask for to end the season on a high note with momentum going into playoffs, knowing that you have a Seattle team like this that runs the ball over 50%, that Russell Wilson feels secure now in that pocket to get the football downfield, something he did in the beginning of the season, to do that at home up against this team that you know you're going to have to control the time of possession
against. So the Dallas offense feels good, but the Dallas defense has to feel terrible.
Without a doubt.
Who you got next week?
Well, next week I will pick the Seattle Seahawks. I will say this. Even though they have Jalen Smith and Van Der Esch on that side of the ball, I just think that the Seattle Seahawks, the way that they've turned around this season, the way that Pete Carroll gets them ready for game time games and the experience and the scenarios, that's a lesson of building from adversity when nobody believed in you as a football team. All you need to do is get in the dance now. It's not about your record before the season. It's about how you capitalize on it now, and I think the Seahawks will.
All right, let's take a break. David, stick around. Coming up, can the Patriots make a Super Bowl run? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Sir David Deal. Patriots ended the season on a strong note. They demolished the Jets 38-3 with Tom Brady throwing four touchdown passes in the process. The season may not have been the dominant one we've come to know from the Patriots, but somehow, some way, they put it all together and now will be the AFC's two seed, getting a first round bye for the ninth straight season. Here is Tom Brady on the importance of getting a week off.
We had a great opportunity for it. And, you know, just glad we could close it out. So you'd hate to have that opportunity and not, you know, handle what we needed to handle. And just glad that we did. And just ended up being a great, you know, way to finish here. Won two games at home and against our division opponents after two pretty tough losses. But showed some resiliency. And we're going to need it going forward. We've got certainly a lot of things to learn about ourselves, a lot of things we can improve on, and see if we can, you know, win a game here in 2 weeks.
All right, David, we've been talking about this all season. This is not the same Tom Brady. It's certainly not the same Gronk. It's not the same offense. There's no more Josh Gordon. And yet here they are in very familiar territory. Do you think this team can make it all the way back to the Super Bowl?
The only thing that is the same is getting no information out of these interviews out of Tom Brady right, and Bill true. Belichick. That's right. The only thing that's the same. I think when you look at this football team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, Gronk is not creating those one-on-one matchups that you think that he is going to open up for everybody else on the outside. And that's where it's really hampered, not having Josh Gordon on this team. They're going to have to find ways to get Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett involved in this offense to open up things in a short and intermediate game for Julian Edelman and to stick with this ground-and-pound running game that they've been having. But for me, the big issue is it's their defense. When you look at their defensive side of the ball, there's nobody, number one, that scares you. There's nobody on an offensive side and offensive line where you're like, okay, we need to slide protections to this guy. We need to chip over there. That helps you offensively so much game planning for them because you don't have to worry about that. And when you think about the departure of Matt Patricia, this used to be a bend but don't break defense. They break now. And when you have an offense that can spread them out, make them either decide to go with a big nickel or a linebacker, that's where you can create those one-on-one matchups for your running back out of the backfield. But once again, widen out that defense and run right down the middle of them.
Listen, I see Gronk running in quicksand.
Yep.
I see Hogan is a guy that's a one-trick pony. He's just a vertical guy that they try to take shots to. You know, I think the loss of Josh Gordon, and people are going to call me a Patriot hater, but listen, this is not the same team. I wouldn't pick the Patriots. Only team I would pick the Patriots to be favored over is maybe the Houston Texans, because I feel like they have their number. I feel like they know how to beat them. But you think
and by
about
by the way, if the Texans win, that's who the that's Patriots get. Like that, yeah. The best thing the Patriots have going for them is how it felt.
Yes. Right.
Like that 11 wins was good enough for a two seed, which typically it's not. That the bracket fell to where I think a lot of people in the wild card round in the AFC think the Chargers and the Ravens are the most dangerous teams. One of them is going to beat the other. And unless the Texans lose to the six-seed Colts.
They will.
It's the okay, well that'll change things. Then Chargers, Ravens, the winner goes to New England. Like, that is what the Patriots – what the Patriots are hoping for is that the bracket holds, that the Texans win, and the Texans, who have lost in the playoffs to the Patriots twice, the two times they've played them in the playoffs. Like, I want to give the Pats credit for what they did yesterday, because I said on TV on Friday that if the Patriots play the way they did against Buffalo, the Jets can beat them. And they didn't play like they did against Buffalo. Instead, they dominated the Jets offensively and defensively. Also give the Patriots credit for this. They are the only team in the league undefeated at home this year. That's surprising that they're the only team in the league undefeated at home, but they are. They also have some quality wins. They went to Chicago and won. They beat Kansas City in an epic game on national television. First game of the year, they beat a Texans team that before it turned into the team it is now, and they beat Indy early, both those teams when they were struggling. So all that's true. I still don't believe in this team, though. I look at the rest of the AFC, and I know what every one of those teams does great. I know what the Chiefs do great. Third highest scoring offense in football history. I know what the Ravens do great. Run the ball, defense, time, possession. I know the Chargers have what you were talking about, guys you have to slide protection to.
Yes.
Both sides of the ball. Like, guys you have to worry about on offense and Keenan Allen. Guys you got to worry about on defense and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, not to mention Derwin James. I know what the Colts do great. It's Andrew Luck and protecting Andrew Luck. And the Texans, Nuke Hopkins is having one of the best years of any player in football, and they have a dominant pass rush.
And the Patriots?
What they do great is they're the Patriots.
Situational football.
Situational football, right.
The situation
and protecting home field.
But to go along with that, that's where they've been losing games is situational football. We've been used to having them have those slumps in September where, like, okay, the defense, this is their preseason. They're getting their things together. Once they get into October, things will mesh. But when you see them lose games in Miami, having Gronk in the back, when you know the quarterback can't throw the ball 70 yards and it's not going to be a Hail Mary, when you have a Tom Brady throwing it up for grabs and throwing an interception in Pittsburgh, those are things that you do not see out of this New England team. Why? Because they do not still have the same confidence and swagger that they used to, where you would go up against them and you're like, oh, this is a scary moment. Right. We're playing
the
Patriots.
Teams still fear
they don't
the
scare
Patriots.
Them
not
the same way.
Iota.
Because if you could put pressure on Tom Brady because of their offensive line and because they still have those problems in between the A and B gaps, which clearly came up in that Pittsburgh game with all the holding calls, he is not the same quarterback because he doesn't have the Wes Welkers, because he doesn't have the Randy Moss.
And Edelman those doesn't look the same either.
Because those like were guys he used to close his eyes and throw the ball to him, knowing that they knew exactly where to be at the right time. He doesn't have that same type of luxury right now.
You said that you don't think teams fear him. So are they? Do they change things around? Is it going to be what we've seen the last couple of weeks, just run the ball through Sony Michel and maybe not put it all on Tom Brady?
Well, I think that's exactly what you're going to get. They're going to try to run the ball, limit the possessions, and hope that they can outsmart you, either get you with some type of trick play by Edelman throwing the ball or some double pass or the Brady special. Where maybe he catches it this time. They're trying to get you to defeat yourself. They're trying to get you to beat yourself and get you in those situational moments where they can score before half. Time and then get back and then score coming out of the half and hope that they can get ahead of you two games. And you look at the guys that's in their division, if they go against Lamar Jackson, you look at the young quarterback, Deshaun Watson, do they throw you a ball? Can you trick them defensively? That's their only hope. It's kind of like Rocky IV, man, when you go in there like, man, he's a man. Yeah. He's not a machine. He bleeds like everybody. Everybody sees their mortality and understand that this window is closing and they're trying to get – listen, if they get to the Super Bowl, this would be the greatest – smoke and mirror show.
100%.
Ever.
They're 9-0 when they rush the ball for 100-plus yards. They're 2-5 when they don't.
Yes.
They've never had a discrepancy like that where when you're game planning against the Patriots now, if you have not the Jets team, but a legitimate team, you can say, if we take away the run, how can they beat us? The problem with the Pats has always been you take away the run, no problem. Brady will kill you.
Exactly.
If you try to take away Brady, good luck with it. But if you can, they don't mind running the ball 40 times when they have to. This Pats team is limited. I understand they dominated the Jets yesterday.
Defenses, first of all, I'm the only one here that gets paid to have to watch the Jets, so I had to watch every play. Listen, Sam Darnold moved the ball. They just went for it on fourth down, and they didn't convert. And Tom Brady, wide open Hogan, right in the back.
Early
and missed him. Tom isn't making the same throws, and I think he's starting to see the rush and hear the rush.
And why do you think they made those adjustments offensively? Because they're trying to put a Band-Aid on the hemorrhage of this defense. They need to control the time of possession. They need to keep this defense off the field because they don't have a pass rush. So being able to run the football and control it that way, that's their way of controlling the football game and not putting their defense in a bad situation where they're going to lose it for them. And that's something that you see in this adjustment and the evolution, not only when you get into December for teams like the New Orleans Saints that can lean on Alvin Kamara and Ingram, but when you have a team like the New England Patriots that don't have the receivers like the Saints have on the offensive side of the ball. That's where Sony Michel coming back healthy. That's where letting this offensive line dictate the tempo of the games comes from, because if they don't, that's where, like we talked about, that Pittsburgh game, you're going to have holding calls, you're going to be in third and longs, and that's not how this New England offense can function.
Every indicator says it's a different team. Road record, overall record, Brady's efficiency, if you want to go as silly as number of Pro Bowlers. Every indicator says this is the worst Patriots team since the year Brady was out with an ACL.
And listen,
they won 11 games. They got the two seed.
Tom's eating potatoes, though. You got to think of the division that they're playing. I'm convinced that he's off the nightshades.
Okay.
He's looking mortal.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.